From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2007, the week between Christmas and New Year's. A 14-year-old girl had been dropped off at the Tops Market on Upper Falls Boulevard by a family member who told her she could no longer stay with her. The girl didn't know what to do. She went into the supermarket to ask for help. That's when a phone call was made to a volunteer named Elaine, who worked with a program called Safe Place. Elaine arrived at Tops and met with the girl in the office of the store's manager. The girl said her family told her that nobody wanted her and that she could find her own way. Elaine's fellow volunteer arrived, and they transported the girl to an emergency shelter. She stayed there until she was reunited with her estranged father. Elaine, the volunteer in this story, is, of course, Elaine Spall, the executive director of the Center for Youth. She was one of the first volunteers for the Safe Place program, which has partners in more than 20,000 sites across the country. In Rochester, there are hundreds of sites, and partners work together to ensure children and teens protected and connected with support during times of crisis. Elaine says her firsthand experience with the program was essential. Now she runs several crisis intervention programs at the Center for Youth to create safety nets for kids, children, teens, families, anyone who needs emergency support. Well, this week was intended to be, and it is, National Safe Place Week. And members of the local team are joining us on the line to discuss the program and its impact. And in essence, that idea has become even more poignant and more pressing for all of us this week during a time of pandemic. I'd like to welcome our guests on the line. Elaine Spall is the executive director of the Center for Youth. Welcome. How are you hanging in there, Elaine?
Hey, Evan. Oh, my goodness. You know, I love you more than ever today, but I am locked in my office at the Center for Youth. I'm wearing denim overalls, I'm pretending to be 16, and I'm feeling right now enormously grateful to this community. I'll tell you more about that later. And, you know, the call about National Safe Place has taken on, as you know, you just said, a whole new meaning right now for us. So we'll talk more, but God bless you, buddy.
Well, it's nice to have you on the line with us. Sparkle Wells is on the line with us, Program Manager for Safe Outreach and Safe Place. How are you?
Good, and yourself?
Well, hanging in there myself. We're all doing our best during these strange times. And Bill Carpenter is the CEO of RTS, the Regional Transit Authority, also on the line with us. Bill, how are you?
Very well, Evan. And my guess is Elaine looks 16 as well. She's dressing like she's 16.
Bill, you knew Elaine Spall couldn't get through 5 minutes without talking fashion, and usually her own fashion. That's how it goes. So let's do this. We're going to talk about this program and what you want the community to know. But I think it's still appropriate to ask our guests to describe what how their scope of work is impacted by what's going on with the crisis. And Bill Carpenter is the CEO of the Regional Transit Authority. It wasn't that long ago you were here getting ready for a lot of changes. It feels like the entire world has changed since I last saw you. So why don't you let our listeners know, because obviously public transportation is vital to any community. There are people in closer spaces. What's going on in regards to the crisis there?
Well, first of all, I've got to give a shout out to our bus operators. Tomorrow is Transit Operators Appreciation Day. We've canceled our celebrations in light of directives from the president, the governor, and the county executive for social distancing. But was at the transit center instead of working out at the gym this morning, was in there about 5:30 to thank the operators who are dealing with a very anxious public. They're very anxious, but they are essential employees to keep the community moving. We have a full complement of operators to provide service. They're doing it professionally, safely, keeping the community moving, getting a lot of support from the county executive, school officials, the governor's office, just the mayor's office. Everyone has absolutely been terrific. And we're going to take this a day at a time. We ask our customers to have some patience if, you know, things down the road need to change. But a big shout out our mechanics, the folks cleaning the buses. We've got a couple at the transit center now during the day to clean the buses to keep them disinfected. Just a lot of people with courage coming out because they know our customers need to get where they need to go, and very privileged to lead the organization.
And as we go forward, do you expect any more changes, or at least changes in the way surfaces are handled? Everything that people are sort of thinking about in terms of where things get transmitted, Bill?
Yeah, we've got the staff at the transit center wiping down the hard surfaces on a regular basis. The bus operators have been given disinfectant. We have smaller buses around town. It's known as RTS Access. For years, it was known as Lift Line, and 5 years ago, I changed the name and probably hear it called Lift Line more than RTS Access. But those operators getting people to appointments, it's a critical service. We, just like businesses around town, people have daycare problems. Some people aren't feeling well and staying home, and that's what we're telling our employees. But if we have to adjust service, we'll communicate that to the public, and we will keep people moving. We'll operate 7 days a week unless the governor or the president tell us not to.
You are in the essential service category. There's no question.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question about that, and our community appreciates that. Are you noticing, Bill, are people starting to sort of stand farther apart, whether it's at the transit center or sit farther apart? Are people thinking about that?
You know, the buses that I got on this morning, this was the buses leaving at 5:40 this morning. People, one to a seat, still talking to each other. We're still social people. They're not, you know, eight people on a bus. They could be very well spread out, but they were not next to each other, but in close proximity, because it's really your group of friends that you're going to your final destination at that time of day. But I bring it back to Safe Place. I was talking with Rick McCarthy, who does a great job leading the transit center. And with this anxiety, schools closed, daycare issues, food issues, yesterday two young ladies, 14 years of age, came in and said, our mom's losing it. She hit us. We're stressed at home. We need to get to a safe place. And I'm so glad that there's partners like Elaine Spall in the community, that those individuals were partner with her, that we can take folks, young people like that, that have a lot of stress in homes right now, able to provide them a safe place and get them the services they need. So public transit is important for a lot of reasons, but so many partners out there that make it a complete service for what people need in our community.
Elaine, when you think about this crisis that the entire world is facing now, when you think about kids and families in our community, what concerns are at the top of your list?
So, Evan, we're facing this like everybody else by putting anybody who can be remote and get out of the buildings. And certainly, you know, the majority of our 300 employees at the center are in schools. They're home. They're remotely. They're doing data. They're doing workshops. They're doing online reading of resources. They're doing their jobs from home. The main office, the mothership here, usually houses about 60 of us. There's about 12 of us here, all in separate spaces. But our shelters must remain open, and they are, and that's one of the things. By the way, I love Bill Carpenter, and we have a mutual love affair. We've known each other since we were children, believe it or not. Well, he was a child. I probably was a bit older, but anyway.
You're younger than I am.
For sure, buddy. I'm wearing sneakers and denim overalls. But listen, we have a community that doesn't quit. So our shelters are open, but they're stressed already. Now, what's going on there? Our biggest shelters are full, and we cannot really take anybody else, but we're keeping them full. My centrifuge staff is not calling in. They're not saying I can't work. They're saying, what do you need? Some of our school-based staff are saying, what do you need? My board members at the Center for Youth are writing saying, do you need food? And the answer is yes. And we're not asking the universe, because we're not Food Link, but we are trying to make sure we can feed our own. The crisis nurseries are open, but we're not providing just general daycare, child care. Those nurseries are saving spots for emergency medical. If a parent is not able to take care of their child, that's the children we want to help with, a DV victim, and not just child care. So we've changed our patterns a teeny bit, but honestly, we are holding steady. I think that some of the other larger adult shelters are struggling in a whole different way, and we feel so badly for them, and we want to continue to support them, but we're keeping our buildings pretty quiet and our kids pretty close to us, and we are finding that we are able to, at least for today and for this week, not change anything. if it comes down tomorrow or the next day or the next day that we have to close our shelters, we're going to be faced with another crisis. We're not hearing that. We're not feeling that. We also have about 50 or 60 older kids who live in apartments. They're holding steady. We're bringing food to them. We're not having them come here. We're not sending them to a central location. So, you know, our emergency planning is already sort of We you know, here's the thing. When I was from the time I was a young parent to today, my word to my own children was chance favors the prepared mind. Chance favors the prepared mind. The Center for Youth has favored the prepared mind, and we know that this is beyond chance. It's crisis. So we're holding steady. We wish we could help others a bit more, but right now we're being a little bit self-involved and really just holding close. So I just am praying for everybody, Evan.
So, Sparkle, what's on your mind, you know, sort of broadly speaking, then we're going to kind of get into exactly what we came here today, planned to come here today and talk about before all of this crisis began. But what's on your top of your mind right now, Sparkle?
The biggest thing that's on the top of my mind is just ensuring that our youth have access to the resources they need to get through this.
Simple as that. I think that's well said.
So we had some calls yesterday. Sparkle, you want to talk about those? Would that be so? You know, we're not with. Do people know that we're not with you? They know that we're calling from our private.
Oh yeah.
Offices.
Well,
did you say that? I don't.
Well,
have
I sort of assume
that.
Every day that the entire Western New York region listens to this program, the Finger Lakes region listens to this program, which by now. What else are we doing? Yes, we're all together.
The other thing, I'm thinking like, hello, Rochester.
You're darn right. This is the microphone of the people right now, and we're going to be here. But yes, we know. They know, I think, generally speaking, that our guests cannot be in studio, and that's going to be like this for a while. So,
sure,
absolutely.
Sure.
But go ahead, Elaine.
Yeah, so Sparkle and I are actually in the same building, but not in the same office, not just because of social distancing, but because we don't want to be on speakerphone. Sparkle, go ahead and let these folks know the calls we had actually, and Bill had, and Bill's right, we had them, and Bill and Sparkle both can describe the nimble response that was happened even yesterday. So I'll let you guys take it.
Awesome. So yesterday we had two young ladies access Safe Place through RTS, as Mr. Comforter shared. They needed a safe place to be because there were some issues at home with mom. We were able to transport them here to the center, do an intake, do an eval, and assess how we could better assist them. They did make the decision not to stay in the shelter, but they did access counseling services to utilize with mom, which is great. We were able to set up phone access for that. Even though we are limiting the youth coming in and out of the building, we are still fully available to them in that capacity.
Okay.
So that's the other thing, Evan. For example, if we are full, which we are getting to capacity right now at all of our shelters, and we have a safe place call, we don't say what other people have said across the world for many years, oh, I'm so sorry, we can't help you. No. We will say, let's make that connection, and within 20 minutes, someone from the center will be where Bill tells us to be,
yeah.
And it can be a rec center, it can be a library, it can be a Tops Market, it can be an RTS bus, it can be a station, it can be wherever they need to be, and then we will take care of it from there. We're not going to say, we don't have any place for you, so we're not going to even answer the call. We will bring kids here. What Sparkle's saying, and we have to, we don't have like, hey, everybody, come on in. We don't want that. We can't have that. We have too many vulnerable folks in our community. So, but when we get a safe place call, we will respond and do everything we can to reunite and counsel. And sometimes that's all it takes. A third party to say to mom, hey, you know, we never been stressed. Can we get the girls back together? Can we help you via phone? Resolve some of this and get them back to you safely, and you'll be surprised at how often just a deep breath and a few hours away can make a difference. So we're going to respond no matter what. Even if our housing is full, we're going to respond, and that's so important.
Well, I want to do a couple of things to make sure our community really understands more about the story we're trying to tell here today. First of all, you know, it was not surprising to me, Elaine, to hear that story of 2007 between Christmas and New Year's, when that 14-year-old girl was dropped off at Tops Market on Upper Falls Boulevard, and the volunteers was you, of course.
Right.
what do you remember about that? And you know, how did you end up sort of deciding to be part of that, Elaine?
So when we decided to take this on, Evan, we knew that we were the right place, this community, Louisville, Kentucky, and I had been named at that point also to the National Safe Place Board. So I was actually going to board meetings in Kentucky as we were planning this. As I got more and more involved, and you know that coincided soon after with my own city council time, I didn't have as much time to actually leave town and travel. So, but that was early on. We knew we were the right place because we had a street outreach program and a nimble response and a shelter for 12 to 18-year-olds. And that was why we did it. So I said, you know, I'm sort of an experiential person. I want to be on the first set of volunteers. I want to be that person. So I took a shift. Now, my staff is very, very smart, and they're all amazing. They're underpaid, but they're amazing, right? So they said, well, the week between Christmas and New Year, who wants to do it? And there was a gap, right? So I signed up. I got that call. My husband made fun of me because I carried around the pager because I'm not usually on call as a CEO here. You know, I didn't play that role. I carried the pager around sort of night and day. The call came in, and I got in my car and drove there, actually probably faster than I should have, and got there first and found this young woman who was despondent. And she had that look. Anybody who's either been a teenage girl or has a teenage daughter right now will know that look, you know, sucking at the teeth and looking at you like, really, I don't even want to talk to you. When she looked at me and she finally said, you know, Miss, nobody wants me, I thought my heart would break, Evan. I will tell you, I have talked about that for years afterwards, saying at that moment, I knew I was in the right place with the right job at the right time. You have never felt that depth of compassion and also just absolute sorrow to see a young person. Mom had an up-and-down sort of experience, had found a new boyfriend she cared more for, and left her with an auntie and some other family members who decided that a 14-year-old girl with an attitude was not what they wanted. Now, we don't vilify parents, we don't vilify adults, but can you imagine being dropped off, saying good luck? There's a big black and yellow sign on the front of a Top Market, as there are in every little decal on every RTS bus. And that signals this is a safe place to come, but she actually was dropped off there. And God bless the store manager, put her in his office, gave her, you know, a snack. And finally, when my partner came, who was very trained, clinically trained, really took over because I was trying very, very hard not to cry, right? So this was the moment for me when I knew this was the right thing to do. And then having partners, can you imagine, we have almost 300 mobile partners, they're called buses. And it's pretty amazing. So that's what happened, and that's the story, and I think it changed my life in many, many ways in that one moment.
So, Bill Carpenter, tell us how, from the perspective of RTS, the program works exactly, and what are the types of situations that you've witnessed?
So, you know, what you have in the body, you've got the heart, you've got the arteries, you've got the veins, and then you've got these capillaries, which, if they didn't exist, it wouldn't work well, but the doctors will tell you that there's a lot more important than the capillaries, and RTS is like the capillaries here that connect youth in trouble with where they're going to get the supports, as Sparkle and Elaine just talked about. So social media, you'll find information about Safe Place. In the schools, you'll find information about Safe Place. And it's one of those things that, I don't need that, I don't need that, I don't need that. And then one day you're a teenager, generally speaking, a young person, you've got a violent incident, you've got a home incident, you've got a crisis in your life, you don't have money, you're not sure where to turn, and you'll notice on the bus there's a logo for Safe Place that has been on that bus your whole time, but you never noticed it before until now you need it, and you're seeing it for the first time. And you get on the bus, or if you're at the transit center, you just go up to someone in uniform and say, I need a safe place. If it's on a bus, the operator knows to call, let folks know that there's a young person that needs help. We do not ask questions. We don't ask for names. We don't ask for proof of crisis. It's completely anonymous. We will contact Elaine's operation. Oftentimes, they'll have someone there 10, 15 minutes, 5 minutes, if they say, gee, we're with someone now, we don't have staff, we will have one of our road supervisors get that person directly to their center. So from the experience of a young person, they simply need to identify themselves that they need a safe place. There's no application to fill out. There's no other proof. Completely confidential.
How aware of this service do you think the community is, Bill?
You know, in preparation for this, Elaine and I talked about it. You know, I came to work here at RTS in 2010. I had never heard of Safe Place, and there's some different stickers on our bus, and I said, geez, what is that? And it was explained to me, and I said, oh, okay. And I bet I could ask some other office employees about it. But if you're a bus operator, you're very aware of it. And I think as a young person, you don't think of it until the time of crisis. And then you'll recall, I've seen this, or they'll check social media, where can I go? And that's where we connect them, where now we become important. Up until that point in time, it's just a subtle awareness that there's safe places all over town.
Hmm. Sparkle Wells, why don't you tell us, as the program manager for Safe Outreach and Safe Place, how you want young people to think about accessing a safe space, and what you want young people to know, but also what you want anyone who, you know, who knows someone who might be impacted to know about this.
Well, recently I've taken on the task of championing awareness for Safe Place, just making sure that our youth understand the signage, the verbiage, what it is they should be looking for. I've been educating the community on what Safe Place is, and our community has been so supportive and just so overwhelming with wanting to become Safe Places. We've actually just acquired two new Safe Place sites, the Henrietta Library and Jordan at Adolescent Health on Parcells Avenue. Anywhere you see that yellow sign, you should be able to access health, and we will get to you immediately to help you with whatever we can.
Elaine Spall, again, how many people do you think really, you know, what's your target or expectation for how many people need this service?
So, you know, one of the things we've been doing a lot is just, and we're sorry, we can't have, we're going to have a big press conference tomorrow at Engine 7 on Genesee Street. We're not going to do that, obviously. You are making a huge impact for me right now because we know people are listening, and adults mostly are listening, but maybe some teens as well. And also, Evan, we know that our staff, our Center for Youth staff in schools, so we're in about 50 different school sites. And those school sites are able to share the word.
Hmm. We lost you for a second, Elaine. Hold on.
Going on.
Oh, there
Sorry
you are.
About that.
Go ahead.
So we know that our school-based folks are sharing the word. You know, we know that about 10 or 15% of our teen population may face this kind of crisis, and that's a lot of kids. And not everybody needs a safe place. Not everybody's going to run away. They do have school counselors. We did have an uptick over the last few months, and certainly, you know, we've had an uptick even in the last week with people out of school. And with family stress and with a lot of people in small spaces and maybe feeling frightened, there are oftentimes, you know, a lot of times holidays are very tough on families, but we do have an enormous amount of out there social media, Sparkle and her folks. We know that the word is not being spread as much as we would like. We hope that programs like this will help.
All right, listeners, we've got Elaine Spall on the program with us today, Executive Director of the Center for Youth. Bill Carpenter is the CEO of RTS, and Sparkle Wells is Program Manager for Safe Outreach and Safe Place. So you've got leaders in our community who are talking about making sure that there is a safe place and services for people in our community, teens especially, who need them. But if you're thinking right now about what's going on in the world, who is most vulnerable, what we all need to do to make sure that the services are there for them, what the transportation services look like. If you've got questions or comments, you can have that aired out this hour. Let's do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994, and you can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we'll come back to your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, all the different ways teaching is changing during this strange time. You're going to hear from some of our colleagues here at WXXI about resources that we in public broadcasting have for the community. And we're going to talk to teachers at different levels about what their work entails now, now that most students are staying home for a while. Connecting with students, teaching, Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And before we take some of your feedback for our guests on the program, Elaine, I want to touch on one thing that you mentioned earlier. You're trying to lead by example by making sure that employees can participate in meetings remotely, that people are only going to be in a particular space if they have to be. And we still hear today in Rochester a number of companies, first of all, who are telling people we still need you to come to work when employees feel like they could accomplish a lot from home or everything they could do from home. We even hear boards, we hear organizations saying, yeah, we still want to meet in person because, you know, if we let you work from home, you won't do it. If we let you meet from home, we don't think you'll show up and participate. What's your message for people who are on the fence about converting the expectations right now?
So I believe that I trust my staff. We have all of our school-based people obviously were mandated to stay home because I could have brought every single one of those 100-and-some people into this building. Why would I do that? Instead, I gave them a menu of great things they could do. I helped direct them into what they could do. Here's a webinar. Here's a book I think you should read. I have a lending library. Come into the office, grab a book, go back home, write a report. Make sure your data is done. We trust our staff. We do not want our staff to. We had a board meeting last night. Guess what? It was canceled. It was non-essential. It was not important enough. This building has the crisis people in the front. There's two of them with a person on the reception, and there's nobody on the third floor and five of us on the second floor and three or four people on the first floor. That's it. Everybody else is trusted, but also employers give them guidance, tell them what they might do, offer them supports. You know, my son works for Partners in Napier. Matthew's home editing is he's getting a lot done. So I also really do believe that good companies understand the value of keeping everybody healthy. Now, there's also a weird sound that happens once in a while here. I think that's a transfer of a call, so forgive us here at the center. We're still pretty busy, but we don't have to be there. I fear that we're selfish in saying that either we don't trust our staff or we're not giving them proper guidance as to what they can do. If you have young staff and you don't think they're going to work hard, give them some kind of assignment. Give them some guidance. You know, here's the things, here's the 10 things that we can get done. I don't understand it, Evan, but you know my mind is very, very community-minded. We have to flatten this curve. We have to. I was on a health care for the homeless board call from 9 to 10:30, a hospital board meeting. We didn't meet. Of course we didn't meet. We met online, so there is an enormous amount that can be done. People have Zoom. They have all these other great techniques. There's no reason to put your staff at risk.
And by the way,
sorry to rant. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, hey, that's why we asked the question. And by the way, you know, with occasional little blips or sort of weird phone sounds, whatever,
yeah,
our listeners are going to give us a wide berth as we host this program through these times here. So we're all good. Our listeners are happy we're here, and we're going to be here, and we're going to make some changes, but that's okay. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Bill Carpenter, Sarah wants to know if bus drivers are wiping down surfaces.
So we've got two different operations going on. The 40-foot bus, we ask that the bus operator make sure that their entryway is clear, the space that they work in is clear. We don't provide enough time in the schedule for the bus operator to wipe everything down after every trip. What we're doing is when it comes into the transit center at midday, we have cleaning staff that come in and wipe the bus down. And then the other operation is the smaller vehicles, as I described before. These are for people who are unable, due to physical or medical limitations, to ride on the 40-foot bus. Those bus operators, it's a smaller vehicle. We're allowing time during their schedule to take care of disinfecting the bus throughout the day. So they've got the product on the bus. And they do have the time to do it.
Okay. Let me get some phone calls. Beatrice and Webster. Go ahead, Beatrice.
Hi, Evan. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Sure.
Evan, I have a problem with the transit company still being open buses. They're going out and then they're coming back home, I'm presuming. And then I have another problem with the libraries are still open to the public. And I have a problem with that, Evan. Why is this? I mean, the suburbs, their libraries are closed.
Well, the central library downtown and all Rochester Public Library branches are closed to the public until further notice. We've been notified.
When did this happen, baby?
That happened just now, as in like
just
coming down. So if this is sort
of
breaking
hallelujah.
News. And
hallelujah.
The notice, let me actually read the notice for you, Beatrice. It says, during this uncertain time, the libraries are adjusting services to best support our employees, their families, and the library users. Library staff will be available online, libraryweb.org, and by phone, 585-428-7300, 9 to 5. Monday through Friday. That's just down.
So thank you. And so why are the buses still running?
Well, the buses, I'll let Bill Carpenter take this, but we are, unfortunately, a society where not every person, first of all, can just stay home, even in a pandemic. I mean, we all want that to happen, to be clear. But we also are a society where many of us don't have cars. And if we have to do essential travel, if we have to get to a grocery store, if we've got to go get meds somewhere, if we've got to get to a doctor, we can't all just jump in the car only when we need to because we don't have that. But I'm going to let Bill, the CEO of RTS, take that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciate the question. And, you know, as I started the show at the beginning, the operator who said to me, you know, I would prefer to be home on my couch. We have employees that would prefer to be home. But what I'm told is, even in the pandemic, people need to eat. I'm told that there's people with chronic health conditions still need to get to the doctors.
Right.
And those shelves at the grocery store need to be stocked. The stores need to be cleaned. Staff in the doctor's office need to get there, not just the patients. Those offices need to be cleaned. So there are essential services, even during a pandemic, that need to continue. And we're committed as a public transit agency to provide that service until the president or the governor say, you need to stop.
Does that help, Beatrice?
It helps. I mean, it has, the part about the buses has satisfied me, but that's how it is. I know my daughter used to ride the buses, and I had to call in once because my daughter said the buses were so filthy. She says, awful money. So I called the bus station, and I said what my daughter said to me, and she says, we're going to look into that. And she said, the part where you wait for the buses, I've never ridden the buses, thank God. But she said, Mommy, it's filth everywhere. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's dangerous. You know, so I would like to believe everything people say that sound good and right. But I would think I'm gullible if I did that. I don't believe everything people tell you that they're doing.
Okay.
I don't. Thank you, Evan, for taking my call. And God bless all of you.
Well, that's okay, Beatrice. Hang in there, and we're going to be here, and we appreciate that. And I know Bill takes it seriously, and I'm not doing PR for Bill or RTS, but Bill, I know cleanliness matters to you. What would you say to what you just heard from Beatrice?
Two things. One is, at this particular point in time, there is not an employee at RTS that wants to get on a bus that isn't clean. And so particularly now, we're doing an exceptional job. There are times through the course of the year, and I'll think of days like, I'm going to forget the, I think it was February 14th, where the temperature was about 10 degrees. We clean our buses with water. You can't do that when it's 10 degrees. It's very difficult, and we have young people, others, that as much as we say you can't eat on the bus, and it's not as clean as we'd like it to be, and the conditions don't allow us to do it. But as soon as we can, we do get the buses clean. If we get a complaint like we just heard about, we'll bring it in during the day to get it cleaned. We have a limited staff during the day. We clean most of them in the evening when they're done for the day. And I'm very proud of our workers, and I'm very mindful that there's the cleanliness that some people expect in their home that they would like to see in every public space. I'm not sure we provide that level of cleanliness. But the standard of what should a public facility look like, certainly our transit center is beautiful all the time. We really have great staff doing the best they can with the conditions. Next month, we break ground on a $12.5 million new facility to clean buses, clean and fuel the buses, where more of the work will be done on the inside. So this 90-degree day where it's too warm to clean and a 10-degree day where it's too cold to clean, or like we had recently, 50-degree winds and people are outside trying to clean the bus before it goes through the brushes. You know, think of your Delta Sonic. You have people outside trying to clean the inside of the bus, and when the conditions outside aren't good, it's difficult. But we're going to change that. On a day-to-day basis, we do a very good job. On a week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year basis, I will hear about a bus that we could have done better, and I'm sorry about that. But overall, real pleased with what we do.
Teresa in Webster writes the following: my partner is a dedicated member of the street outreach team. I'm biased, but I can't tell you how dedicated and passionate the team is. Dan goes in every day, especially Monday, not always knowing what his day will be like and not always knowing what time he will get out. If he gets a safe space call at the end of the day, he won't be home until very late sometimes. However, that is the priority, not punching out on time. This job means more to him than a paycheck, although we need this check to get by. Listening to this, I'm so proud to call him my partner. I always was, but I know how important his job is now more than ever. Center for Youth, your whole staff is so critical, and thanks for all you do for this community. Elaine, you want to respond to Teresa and
yes,
Webster?
Thank you, Teresa, and we love Dan. Probably not quite as much as you do, but I am fond of him, buddy, and I'm so grateful. You know, the folks at the center are made of a different DNA. I can't even, I'm going to get teary-eyed. There is an amazing heart and skill and competence, and it comes together, and the whole agency. You know, we talk about our new strategic plan is talking about building a beloved community of inclusiveness and compassion, and we start there. Now, it's hard work. Dan is on the street. He may find himself in a less than safe place, and he's going to make it helping with kids. So, sharing Dan with us, and we're going to try to keep him safe. We won't go out on the street this week, but if there's a safe place call, believe me, he might be called in. Sweetheart, be patient with us. And, Evan, you know, that I don't know Teresa. I've never met her, so this isn't some sort of a prompt call. But I think that does reflect the way our families feel about their employees, their loved ones who work here. They share them with us. They're not quite first-line responders like RPD and the fire department, you know, who I love so much. In my years on council, but really there is a different DNA of people who sign up to work at a place like the Center for Youth.
All right, let me get Jim in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello, Jim. Thank you. Evan.
Yes.
My name is Jim Willanius. I live in the 19th Ward. I'm a retired guy, engineer by trade, and an amateur historian. It's serious. And my concern, as I've been listening to the program for very good speakers and who are representing their organization and saying what the organization is going to be doing to help through the crisis. Okay. I want to either now or even at a later session bring up what individuals can be doing on their own to help the situation. And if you give me enough time, I would go back to Winston Churchill's address to the House of Commons in May of 1940. It may be a longer thing than you can do on this program, but there's a message I wish to get out, and that there are many things as individuals we can do, and try to remember we are in a situation like World War II. We don't have time to think about or debate. We need to act. Now, that's my background. I don't know what I can talk more. You can put me to another time and we can talk, but I just hope to get a very clear message out.
Okay. Well, Jim, first of all, thank you for the call, and I'll let you go. We can talk on a different day here if you want to send me an email, but here's the point I think to extend from Jim's phone call. This is this is not something that just about anybody alive in this country today had a script for. We couldn't have envisioned a month ago that we'd be sitting here in the middle of March feeling like we are in wartime. But essentially, Jim's right. I mean, that's really what the mindset has to be if we're going to deal anywhere near appropriately. And I'll ask our guests how they feel how that's changed and sort of how they interpret Jim's call, because he's urging us all to go read Churchill's admonition to the British public to get ready for war, to sacrifice, to think about the long term. And we can do that offline. But Elaine Spall, what do you make of what you just heard from Jim?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're struggling with here at the center, and thank you so much, Jim, and those who have history to share, we have had to ask any of our new volunteers to not come. And we know that that's not what we want to do, but we're trying to keep people safe, right? So unless we have gaps in our own staff, we're going to say right now we're not encouraging new volunteers. Many of our volunteers are saying, we're here if you need us. They're not backing off. But again, we have to be safe. There is a part for everyone to play, and maybe what we need to do as organizations is be more thoughtful about that. Right now, people are offering food. We're having people drop off made meals here, and we're taking them to the shelters, especially to our kids in apartments. There are people who are dropping off gift cards for later, but that's in place of face-to-face doing stuff right now. And, you know, I went to my gym this morning, and, of course, it was closed. What was I thinking? But and so I decided I would just run up and down East Avenue and Park Avenue, and it was like it was the way it is, like on Christmas Day when there's just nobody around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was eerie. It was eerie. It was scary. I didn't like the feeling, but I also was respecting the fact that people understood this is serious business. Get out home. Close to what you love. Too close to anybody else. But Jim, those of us who are in the service industry have an obligation, and I think we should take it even more seriously as we plan over the next few months and on to find ways to embrace this community in whatever way they want to help us. We've got to find a way to do that. United Way has a huge volunteer connection going on. I praise them for that, Jamie and her staff. And so I think you're going to see a wider berth of asking for volunteers, and maybe Jim's wisdom can be useful to us.
Sure. Sparkle, I think you're the youngest person on the panel, I'm guessing. Do you think that to your generation it feels like the world is different this week and that our mindset has to be different?
Oh, absolutely. This is something I don't think many of us saw coming. But I think that the center has been great at adapting to working with the staff and the youth. And I would just personally like to ask our community to continue to support with food, donations of that sort, but also be mindful and please be patient with us as we work through the transitions to limit contact with others but still provide services to our youth.
Sure. Bill Carpenter, what do you make of Jim's call?
I really appreciate the call, and I think individuals who are in their home, and we've heard these stories. I have a very dear friend in her mid-80s. He has mild mental acuity issues, someone I've known since 40-plus years. If she were to see me, I'd have to remind her of my name. Her family can't visit her. We've heard those stories. We've got seniors that live on a street that need to make sure their food and prescriptions are being taken care of, that this is get out of your own way of how is it impacting you. And as Jim said, what can I do right now to make this better for someone else. And certainly social distancing, personal hygiene, keep yourself well. All those things that we're hearing from our health director, I think our county executive has done a good job. Stay calm, but follow the advice of our leaders. And I was on a call with what the United Way is doing. $1.7 million has been raised since yesterday to help fund the services that are needed. There's a Volunteer United on the website, what is it that you need, and people can kind of match, someone needs this and I want to donate it. And I will tell you, the county executive and Congressman Morelli are leading an effort to coordinate the needs of the community, the not-for-profit organizations. Food is critical. Transportation is critical. There's a lot of people who have lost their jobs. There's a lot of needs right now in the community. I think Jim is right that it's not as simple as just, oh, I don't have to go into work today. Be thinking about what you can do to help.
An email from Dan Lill, who writes the following. Elaine Spall is one of my favorite people in the world. Years ago at a teen empowerment luncheon, she introduced us to the concept of unclaimed children, kids who are unconnected to family, school, church, or community. It brought me to tears. It was a foreign concept at the time, but it no longer is for so many of us. Unclaimed children frequently end up as unclaimed adults, and we deal with them at our community bikes pretty regularly. The Center for Youth Crisis Nurseries are reflections of Elaine in the mission. Rochester's blessed to have her and all of the devoted folks. And by the way, Rochester Community Bikes, the bike shop, is closed indefinitely, and we hope and pray that our folks are doing okay. From Dan Lill. Go ahead, Elaine.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. You know, I was honored by Teen Empowerment a few years ago, and in my acceptance speech, I was sort of bemoaning the fact that at that point at the state government, under different kind of leadership, we had described our young people who were homeless as unclaimed. And I was outraged because for me and for many of us, that's like an unclaimed freight, like a piece of furniture that somebody forgot to pick up and or luggage that they just didn't want anymore. And for us to describe our children that way. And the audience embraced me, and I stood up and cheered, and I thought, well, thank you so much, but that doesn't change the fact that we've got lots and lots of kids. That young woman, that 14-year-old, in that moment, Evan was unclaimed, right? And that's just unacceptable, and we have what it takes. This is an amazing community. We have what it takes. We will not give up. You know, we have had some setbacks before. This is a different kind of one. But from Jim's point, Dan, and God bless Teresa and everybody else, and Evan, your role in allowing us to be here with you today to spread this message is really important. You know how I feel about you, buddy. It's not about that. It's just that without shows like this, so we can talk about it, it's not about Elaine Spall. I just happen to be put in a lucky spot, and I've taken advantage of it. But I have a team. We have a team. My call this morning with the hospitals was amazing. Doctors, people who are not afraid. They want to be the best selves. Our new leadership at the county, all of us in this together. And, you know, yes, I get a lot of kudos. I appreciate that. My years on council, you know, we're blessed. But it's more than that. It's providing a leadership and saying we will do whatever it takes. And right now, we need you all at the table. All of my friends listening, anybody else, we need you all.
Yeah. All right, real briefly, in our last couple of minutes, Sparkle Wells, as Program Manager for Safe Outreach and Safe Place, what do you want to leave with the community so they understand what resources are there going forward?
Please, please, please check out our webpage, the Center for Youth Facebook. We have a Center for Youth Instagram. We'll be posting more information about Safe Place and Safe Place sites throughout the week. We'll also be doing a live to kind of share the history of Safe Place and some updated Safe Place locations.
Okay. Bill Carpenter, what message do you have for the community?
Safe Place is a great support for the community, and a shameless plug. Tomorrow is Transit Operator Appreciation Day. If you take the bus, please thank your operator.
Do it, and you know, maybe shout it at them from a safe distance. But you know what? We can't wait to when we get back to high-fiving our transit operators. And that day will come. It's not today. But they are, you know, I'm going to use this term as the weeks and months pile up here. we're going to use the term heroes in different ways, and we're going to think differently about what actually is heroic. And heroic is showing up for work when you know what's happening and still being there when your service is essential. So for your operators, Bill, all the love. Thank you. Please send that message. And Elaine Spall, about 30 seconds, if you can do it, final message from you.
Well, you know, when we talk about safety, safety is personal safety, safety is community safety. We want you to know, please, if you're listening, if you have someone between 12 and 21, if you are between 12 and 21, we will welcome you in a safe place site. Do not stay in a dangerous spot. Do not leave things to chance. Be prepared. Safe Place is there for you. They're all over the community. Check out the website. But also, don't stay in a dangerous spot, young people. If you need our help, we're there. And that's the only thing I would say. You are not in this alone. Everyone needs help sometime. Do not be proud. Reach out. And God bless you all. Evan, thank you. And thank the brilliant Megan Mack, too.
Oh, well, she is. She is. We'll do that. Elaine Spall, the Executive Director of the Center for Youth. Bill Carpenter, the CEO of RTS. Sparkle Wells, Program Manager for Safe Outreach and Safe Place. Thanks to all three of you for being with us.
Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye. And yes, the whole crew here at Connections for you every day. Megan Mack is the producer. And she's brilliant. Rob Braden is the engineer. He's probably brilliant. Probably. What do you think, Rob? I'm going to say yes. I'm Evan Dawson. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you every day. And we're right back with you tomorrow, right here on member-supported public radio.